Well, good evening. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host on, or I'm going to introduce Speak Up Arkansas again today. Thank all of you all for listening. Speak Arkansas is a place to learn about and share the experiences of people impacted by the policies and practice and programs enacted by your elected officials and also implemented by public officials. And rather, we're looking to see whether they have a positive or negative effect. And we understand with the session that it's now time to hold your political leaders accountable for what they are doing to or for all of those, many of us overlooked by the broader community. We hope to help you understand what's going on and to act when you feel inclined to do so. I want to, again, welcome you to Speak Up Arkansas. I think before we get started, I'd like to do a little brief legislative summary. We'd like to start out the show with that. I'll just go over a few things. I know issues dealing with tenant rights and all of that are going to be taken care of during the show, and so I won't be talking about that. But there, House Bill 1042 was filed by Representative Smith from Jonesboro. This is sort of under the civil and human rights category. That would prohibit institutions of higher learning from adopting sanctuary policies that grant undocumented immigrants the right to lawful presence on campus or limit employee contact with federal immigration authorities. Another one in that category, Senate Bill 14, filed by Senator Gary Stubblefield from Branch, Arkansas, which would prohibit municipalities from enacting sanctuary policies that grant to legal immigrants the right to a lawful presence within that city and prohibit law enforcement for asking immigration status. So he's trying to make sure that the law enforcement can ask about it and also that these cities can't limit federal immigration authorities from in their community. Then we turn to economic justice. House Bill 1045, filed by Representative Lundstrom from Springdale, will cut unemployment benefits, something folks need to be paying attention to. On the good side is House Bill 1046, which was filed by Representative Clark Tucker of Little Rock, to allow up to 6 weeks of paid maternity leave for women who have been employed by the state for more than a year. Another one in that category is a bill by Senator Joyce Elliott to require the Attorney General to bring fair housing civil suits when the Fair Housing Commission finds a breach of a conciliation agreement. Another bill was filed by Representative Josh Miller, which would require the Department of Human Services to stop enrollment in the Medicaid expansion plan on July 1, 2017. I understand there's another bill filed in the Senate that would do even worse than that and not just cut off enrollment, but actually do away with it. So you need to be keeping an eye on that, those of you who care about health insurance. Restorative justice, Senator Joyce Elliott again, Senate Bill 237 would require a racial impact statement to be prepared anytime a change is proposed in the legislature that would create a new misdemeanor or felony. Or any change in existing charges and parole procedures. So a racial impact statement is something I know she tried to get passed in the previous session. And one that I'm very familiar with, the Senate Bill 294. This is the bill that would do away with life without parole for minors and set up a process for resentencing what has now been determined by the Supreme Court to be unconstitutional. And that bill is going to be a special order of business this coming Wednesday, February 22nd at 10 a.m. I do want to give a brief comment about the forerunners and the legislative amendments. It looks like the amendment on voter ID legislation and one on tort reform are kind of some two of the leading candidates for that. It's worth noting, though, that there have been several amendments proposed that would seek to limit the state's role in funding education, either by passing more of the responsibility to local school districts or by limiting the ability of the Supreme Court to review policy decisions by the legislature. So that's a summary. I'm sure there are 1,000 bills out there, and I don't want to go on and on, but we're here tonight, to talk about something that Arkansas really needs to get to work on, and that is its landlord-tenant laws and the consequences of the laws as they currently are. And I am happy to have Ryan Davis in the studio today, and he is going to moderate this discussion, and I'll be chiming in every so often. But right now, Ryan, welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Paul. This is Ryan Davis, your moderator. This is Speak Up Arkansas, KABF 88.3. We have a panel of distinguished guests today for our show, and grateful that many of them made it in a hair. Thank you all for being here with us. As you all maybe don't know, I didn't know until maybe a couple of years ago, Arkansas has the dubious distinction as the only state that criminalizes, essentially it criminalizes poverty, criminalizes non-payment of rent. Arkansas is the only state, there are 50, 49 of them do, Arkansas does not have what is called a implied warranty of habitability. And each of those words by themselves mean exactly what it says. No implication that this place is habitable. And so we have our panel of guests who will speak to that today. I'd like to begin with a timeline beginning at about 2015. Let me introduce our guest. We have with us today Ellie Wheeler. She's a senior policy analyst at Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. A part of what she works with is family and economic issues and economic security, rather. And we're grateful to have you. Welcome, Ellie. We also have with us Amy Pritchard. She's the director of Consumer Protection Clinic in the Office of Clinical Programs, at the William H. Bowen School of Law. And Amy has had an exciting past couple of days, I hear, and we perhaps maybe, I'm going to look for the head signal and see if we can talk about that maybe. I'm seeing a yes. Thank you. Welcome, Amy. We also have with us Mr. Neil Seeley. He's the executive director of the Arkansas Community Organization. He's also one of the co-authors of the report Out of Balance, Arkansas Renters Share Their Experiences Navigating the State's Unique Landlord-Tenant Laws. Welcome, Neil. Glad to have you.
Thank you for having us.
And last but certainly not least, a good surprise we have with Mr. Jason Auer. Jason is a staff attorney for Legal Aid of Arkansas. And I have to say that I first encountered you in the news in 2015 fighting bed bugs in West Memphis. And so here we are 2 years later, he's still fighting the good fight. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you. And yeah, bed bugs are still a big problem.
Yes, indeed. And that's exactly what we're talking about, a bed bug of a situation, right? Not to speak of it lightly. Ellie, two things, because you're the policy analyst and I'm not. Give us some clarity, if you can, surrounding some of the, I know that there was Senate Bill 25, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, that's right.
And if I'm not mistaken, Senate Bill 25 is now Act 159.
That's right, it was signed, it's now Act 159, signed yesterday on Valentine's Day.
Lovely.
Landlords, a sweetheart deal for them.
Yes. Senate Bill 25 deals with the failure to vacate statute, and that's the part that you mentioned before of the Arkansas law that that deals with making it a crime to be late on your rent. Even one day late, you can face criminal charges for that. So SB 25 changes that statute a little bit, but it still maintains the criminal eviction statute, which is one of the worst parts of the law and is one of the reasons why Arkansas does have the worst landlord-tenant laws in the nation.
Hmm. Absolutely. And how does it differ, you know, in terms from House Bill 1166? And if, I know the title of House Bill 1166 is to clarify the obligations of residential landlords and residential tenants, and then it goes on beyond that.
Sure. So HB 1166 deals with the other terrible part of the Arkansas landlord tenant
because
situation.
Why leave anything behind?
Right. So HB 1166 deals with the warranty of habitability issue that you also mentioned earlier. And unfortunately, this bill doesn't do a lot to really help tenants in that situation. It does change the law a little bit, but essentially you can still live in a completely uninhabitable place and have no recourse with your landlord. Some of the provisions that they have are like you, landlords are required to maintain heat and air, but only if that was in place at the beginning, and things like that, that some serious code violations and some really serious bed bug infestations could, you have no right to withhold rent from your landlord if they fail to make your residence habitable.
And Neil, could you speak to that a little bit more? I know that some of what I read in the Out of Bounds report was absolutely striking, some of the personal stories. And so I think that, you know, for some of our listeners, maybe we need to get the picture that we're not just talking about, you know, perhaps a broken window, right? We're talking about some serious habitability issues.
Yeah, I can give you a recent example that I encountered. I met at the Rights After Wrongs event that the CARE Coalition and the city put on, a woman who told me a story. She lived in, she wanted to move out of her neighborhood that had some crime, and so found an apartment in West Little Rock, and she signed a lease, paid a deposit, but the ice storms in 2015 came and she couldn't get there in time. So the apartment she chose had already been given away, so she got a different apartment. So she walked in and there was a broken window. And the landlord said, well, you must have broken it when you were moving your furniture in. And she said, no. So, but she did get the window fixed. And then her whole electrical system was messed up. So for two, and this is an apartment complex right off Cantrell Road, west of 430. And so she didn't have air conditioning for two summers. And then one night she was sleeping and she heard an explosion and saw a fire, and the electrical, where the circuit breakers are, that box blew up. Hmm. And she called the fire department, called city codes, had a hard time getting city codes to come out because they said, well, the fire department came, so your problem's fixed. And so she's had to live in total anxiety for 2 years.
Wow, I can't even imagine.
And a lot of stress.
Hmm.
So that's just one example.
With something, you know, just one example, and something so extreme, it leaves me wondering where a client stands legally when you are faced with something like that. I know that in 2015, Pulaski County Circuit Court Judge Herbert Wright issued an order finding that the former statute rather was wholly unconstitutional. So Jason, Amy, and I'm assuming, I guess, that the legislature has found a way around that. And so, what does that mean for tenants in Arkansas?
Well, the legislature really hasn't found a way around Judge Wright's ruling. What the legislature has done is it has stricken a certain provision from the statute that was added much later from when the statute was originally enacted. The statute was originally enacted in 1901. And from 1901 until about 2007, the statute just provided for a fine. In 2007, I believe it was, the Arkansas legislature at that time added in a provision by which a tenant, if they were charged with failing to vacate, had to pay money, the money that the landlord alleged they owed, into the registry of the court. And if they didn't, then if they were subsequently convicted, they can be convicted of a higher level offense, a Class B misdemeanor, which carries up to 90 days in jail.
And this is a criminal offense.
This is a criminal offense, right? You go to criminal court. And when advocates were arguing that the statute was unconstitutional, a lot of the focus was on that registry requirement. And that's the part that the Arkansas legislature has now gone back and taken out. So it's now, once again, just a $1 to $25 a day fine for tenants convicted for failing to vacate. I mean, it still operates very coercively for tenants, but they took out that particular provision. Now, Judge Wright's ruling was actually more broad than just the registry requirement.
I see.
He found, among other things, that the statute actually violated the Eighth Amendment's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment because it criminalizes a private debt. He also found it to be a debtor's prison under the Arkansas Constitution. And the legislative changes that have just come about don't address those issues. So in that way, I don't think it really changes much, particularly here in Little Rock, where Judge Wright's ruling is the law.
So Amy, a tenant in anywhere in Arkansas who is, for instance, withholding rent or is unable to pay rent, I guess we'll stick with the first scenario, who is perhaps withholding rent because they have a gigantic hole in the roof.
Mm-hmm.
When they go into court, and maybe you have some recent experiences that you might be able to share, and when they go into court, what happens to them?
Well, as an attorney, if my client were to call me and say I'm intending to withhold rent, in a lot of places in Arkansas, I'd have to advise them that they could face criminal charges for that. So that's, you'd have to recommend that they don't withhold rent if they don't want to face these criminal charges, because when they go in front of a criminal judge, they're not usually given the opportunity to explain they have a hole in the roof, there's mold on their walls, there's raw sewage. They're just given the opportunity to say, did you pay your rent or no? And the case that we actually had a hearing on yesterday was a pretty large apartment complex here in Little Rock, where there were 141 units. Tenants were facing all those conditions, raw sewage, both in the backyards, coming up into their living areas, onto their floors, mold, roofs caving in every time it rained. And the only recourse that they have under Arkansas law was they could either move out and still possibly be liable for the entire amount of the rent, or they can call city code. And so what they were doing for years was calling city code, and city code was coming out and citing the property owner. But that wasn't causing changes to come about. So ultimately what happened with this complex is the fire and city code came out and looked at the place and realized how bad it was and how bad the conditions were that people were living in, and ordered it shut down in December of 2015 without any proper notice to the tenants. So it didn't give tenants an opportunity to contest that action, and it didn't give tenants any sort of relocation assistance. It just said, I think 4 days before Christmas, you have to be out. So we and Neil's organization and Legal Aid, the law school, and Central Arkansas Legal Services filed a lawsuit or intervened in a lawsuit to try to stop that closure. And then we brought a suit against the landlord for those conditions that the tenants had been living in.
So, wow. And just for clarity's sake, I know we have a very listener base. Just to make it as plain as possible, you know, we're saying that this is not something that could happen in 49 other states, and that Arkansas is unique in this way. I could imagine many scenarios, but what is the resistance in this state? I mean, what's unique about this state that that even exists. And I mean, anybody can certainly address that.
The argument that was put forth in previous years is that Arkansas has some of the lowest rent, and that a tenant who is enjoying that low rent can choose to live somewhere that the conditions aren't great, and then that would be a choice on behalf of the tenant. And that if a landlord was required to bring their housing to a minimum standard, that would raise rents throughout the state of Arkansas.
You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas, KABF 88.3. Listeners, if you have any questions, you may email us at speakupar@gmail.com. That's speakupar@gmail.com. I think we have a caller. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing great. Who are we speaking with?
Man, I just literally moved out of a house. I had black mold in my ceiling, mold in my cabinets. My mother's bedroom, the floor has fallen in a foot. And Arkansas has the lowest rent in the nation? Really? I just got a new place and I'm spending $700 to $800. It just cost me $2,000 to get in it.
Yeah, and that was the argument. It's no longer, I mean, it's one of the lower rents in the nation, but that was the argument that the...
Hey, sweetheart, I'm sorry, but I can't hear you unless I turn my radio off, then you won't hear me.
Sure, that was the argument that a lot of folks who were proponents of keeping the status quo were putting forward, is that it's one of the lowest rents in the country.
And then you talk about the what you get for that rent, too. It's not, in many cases, worth it. Yeah.
You'd like to. I think we lost our caller, but I think he made an important point. I immediately thought of, and maybe this is kind of a natural reflex for folks at Arkansas, but I immediately thought of Mississippi, and you know, actually, nearly every other surrounding state. And so that doesn't sound right at all. That you know.
And Alabama was the second to last state to enact a warranty of habitability, and that was in 2007 or 2009, I believe, that they enacted the warranty of habitability.
And is there any legislative push on the other side, Ellie? Oh, we have a caller.
Yeah, hey, it's me again.
Welcome back.
Actually, Mississippi has better tenant laws than Arkansas does.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm unfortunately from Mississippi, and I was wishing I was moving there now, because even the house I just moved into, I know it doesn't have any insulation. The windows are 30 years old. I mean, why is it that our state government wants us, the poorer people, to suffer in this country, in this state?
Ellie?
Is there any legitimate reason?
And not that I know of, and what that brings to mind for me is just the fact that we are in the South, rents are cheaper here, but the cost in Arkansas is really not that drastically different from all the other southern states that have relatively low
rents. It was cheaper when I rented in California.
Thank you.
And that was under 10 years ago.
Right.
I could get a better deal. It's in Conway, Arkansas.
Right. So it's really just not worth the cost to keep people in Arkansas living in these horrible conditions.
And on top of that, you go to usually a 30-day notice. If two people are working, you really don't have time in 30 days to find a decent house. Mm-hmm. You are scrambling.
Yeah, and that also connects to, you know, it's expensive to have to move and to put down a deposit, potentially lose your old deposit.
Number one, too, the reason I actually had to move is because I spoke up about my living condition, and then the new leasing office realized they could get more for this property if they actually fixed it up.
Right.
So that's why we got kicked out, because we had, you know, rent was $425 for a little bitty tiny crap hole. And our bills were more than that just to keep it heated and cooled. And our landlords decided they wanted to kick us out so they could make more money, and that's just not right either.
Yes,
you
sir.
Know, where do poor people in the state live?
Tell us your name again, caller.
I'm Joe.
Joe, thank you.
Y'all know me at KABF. I'm calling all the time.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Joe. We appreciate you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right.
And so, Ellie, to my previous question, are there any efforts, and I might be assuming something, but are there any efforts on the other side of the aisle, as it were, to do something that everybody is doing?
Well, you know, the session's not over yet. There's still room and time for other bills to come through, and certainly we're hopeful that other better bills would arise, but we just don't know really what's going to happen. I would recommend, if anyone's interested in sort of learning more about the current research, to go to fairpropertylaws.org, and they have a lot of information on Arkansas landlord-tenant laws, and they update that pretty regularly to let people know what the new bills are and what the latest research is.
And what can I note from the report that Neil co-authored, the Out of Bounds report, that two-thirds of the respondents in this report had no idea that this law even existed, and which means to me that two-thirds of the folks in our state don't know how adversely affected tenants are. And so how do we get folks, I think Arkansas is compassionate enough still, to activate around this?
We interviewed about 1,000 people, so for that report. So yeah, two-thirds, it is, but people don't understand. So our organization is making an effort to really get out there and talk to renters. And I think this year we're actually very optimistic because we now have a lot of organizations concerned, Arkansas Advocates, the Citizens First Congress. And so this is great. So I think that that it's just getting out there, doing a lot of organizing, face-to-face contact. We're planning to hold a lot of community meetings. And so it's to get that awareness. Now, why are we stuck in this situation? There's a lobby called the Arkansas Realtors Association that gives to everybody from local all the way to state, and they're loaded.
Carla, you're on the air. Tell us your name.
My name is Lamont.
Hi, Lamont.
What's going on?
Speak to us.
Why, if back in the 1800s, when, you know, the Sooners, you know, left going to West, and they got land for free from the government, why does the government now tax you for the land they gave you for free?
I'm going to defer to the attorneys right across from me, and
they gave it to you, and then they go, okay, you owe me more money now because you got it for free.
You know, I'm not completely sure about that at all. I'm trying to remember. I was going to pretend like I knew something about the homestead.
Well, I mean, if you own the property, why are you paying property tax? I own it. Who am I paying the property tax to? I own it. I don't get no check in the mail coming back.
Yeah, I hear you. I guess ostensibly to the to the government, you know, maybe for the schools and roads.
I'll venture a plug for property tax. I mean, a lot of that goes to local schools that we all benefit from.
Well, yeah, you know, I can see a school tax. Yeah, I could pay, you know, school tax, you know, for schools and trash tax and stuff like that. But I ain't going to pay tax on my own place.
Well, maybe they'll rename it for us. Thank you for calling us.
All right, man.
Thank you. I want to read this. I love this poem from Langston Hughes, and then we're going to go into a break. Landlord, landlord, my roof has sprung a leak. Don't you remember I told you about it way last week? Landlord, landlord, these steps is broken down. When you come up yourself, it's a wonder you don't fall down. $10 you say I owe. $10 you say is due. Well, there's $10 more and I'll pay you till you fix up this house due. What? You gonna get eviction orders? You gonna cut off my heat? You gonna take my furniture and throw it in the street? Police, police, come and get this man. He's trying to ruin the government and overturn the land. Copper's whistle, patrol bell, arrest. Precinct station, iron cell, headlines and press. Man threatens landlord, tenant held, no bail. Judge gives Negro 90 days in jail. That's a little from Langston Hughes in his Black History Month. We'll be right back. Speak Up Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Welcome back. You're listening to KABF 88.3. This is Speak Up Arkansas, and today we're talking about the pitiful, the report says unique, but I'll say pitiful state of landlord-tenant laws in the state of Arkansas, as is no warranty. And speaking of the report, and just also that poem was actually printed in the report. I really like that sartorial flair. So the report again is out of balance. Arkansas renters share their experiences navigating the state's unique landlord tenant laws. We have one of the co-authors here, but it's authored out of the University of Arkansas for Medical Science, the Bozeman College of Public Health, and also with Neil Seeley, the executive director of the Arkansas Community Organizations. And I mentioned earlier, Jason, that I did the first time I recognized your name was back in 2015, and you all were dealing with a case of extreme case rather of bed bugs in a West Memphis apartment complex. And this report addresses some of those self same things. And so I want to talk specifically about some of the public health impacts of this lack of protection for tenants in our state. We've heard some of the personal narratives about an apartment building with raw sewage and with mold and with caving in roofs. And so here we go. We have a caller. Caller, tell us your name.
Hey, is this Ed?
Hey.
Yes, can you?
Can you hear us?
Yeah.
This is Speak Up Arkansas. Speak to us. Or not. Continue to listen.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So public health impacts. How now I know that I think we probably all can imagine the obvious ways that something like a mold infestation or sewage coming into your living areas, how that affects you. But if you can give us kind of a broader sense, any of us, I think all of you can speak to this, but anyone who wants to jump in, give us kind of a broader idea of how these laws adversely affect the public health of Arkansas renters.
Okay. Well, there are various ways. And so in the example I gave, stress is one of the most common things that we heard in the Out of Balance report. And just the anxiety of not having a good place to live, not knowing, you know, having your circuit breaker box blow up. And so it's stress, mental stress is one. So the other project, what grew out of balance is what we call we're doing with community partners, other partners, the Care Coalition and UAMS and UALR, Legal Aid and Center for Arkansas Legal Service, a health impact assessment of the various warranty of habitability. So we're just digging down deep in that. But what we're going to look at is, in particular, respiratory problems that you get from mold, from pests. And we're going to dig in, look at code violations in the city of Little Rock and track them against data we get from hospitals. So that's in the future, but that's what, just in our initial work with focus groups, we're hearing stress, respiratory problems, and then what else have you all, insect bites, but anything that you all have encountered?
One of the other public health impacts that we often see is families having to choose between paying for food or paying their heat bill. If their heat and air isn't working properly or their windows aren't keeping heat or air in, they're having to pay those heat or air bills or the electricity bill, and they're not able to pay for medicine or food. And it's some of those trade-offs that have an indirect impact on health. And then obviously increased asthma, skin issues, respiratory issues, like Neil mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And wow, as you all are speaking, I'm hearing, you know, a lot of things that are seemingly ancillary. I mean, just I can imagine that there's also a pretty big impact on the children. You know, I imagine, as with all types of victimization, children suffer the most. Mm-hmm. And so is there any data connected to how children are affected?
In one of our focus groups, we heard stories about self-esteem amongst children. So that's a psychological effect that children don't, are embarrassed to go back, to tell people where they live, embarrassed to go back. We heard another, and this is another story of a child who went to school and carried pest in the child's backpack, which later infested the school.
Wow. So, and here's a kind of a different route, but concerned, of course, the same things. What possibly can listeners do? I know, of course, that Arkansas Community Organization is organizing renters, and I know from growing up and my mother having been involved that Acorn was doing some of the same things, and so there's always been a consistent something for people in our state concerning tenants, but. And I know everybody wants the groundswell, of course, you know, everybody wants the legislation on their side. But what are some things that people can start to do immediately? Because the issue has become more prominent. I note that Leslie Rutledge got involved in this most previous case and asked for a state. I'm not exactly sure where that is, if you all could help me out with that. But, you know, one of my favorite Martin Luther King books is, you know, where do we go from here? Chaos or community? And so I guess that's the broad question.
I mean, you can obviously contact your legislators and let them know that you support improvements to the law in Arkansas and you're on the side of tenants. But if you can do that, you can also be informed. The book on my bedside table right now is a book by Matthew Desmond called Evicted. It's an amazing book that gives wonderful stories, fascinating insight into what it's like to be a renter in a low-income community in America, as well as what it's like to be a landlord in low-income communities in America. And I really recommend it. You can recommend it to your book club and start those conversations with your friends. I know a lot of people don't know about what it's like, don't know about the laws, and one of the best things you can do is just have those conversations with your friends and family about the reality of landlord-tenant laws in Arkansas.
Yeah, this is probably a very opportune moment in the particular history of our country and our state. I mean, this is we are in a, well, I don't have any radio-friendly ways to describe it, but I think you all know where I'm going with this, but the, still the question for everybody, you know, where do we go as, you know, as renters? Where do we go as advocates? Where do we go as community builders and just as community members? And, you know, also I'd like to add into that question, are the legislators favorable? I mean, I think we could probably think of some of the usual suspects, but are the people amenable to carrying the football, if you will? Speak up, Arkansas. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. I had a question about all these landlord-tenant laws. So if you sign a contract to get housing with a landlord, are they able to, like, breach their own contract and throw people out if they want to? Or, like, which document supersedes the other? I'll take my call off the air, or the answer off the air.
Thank you.
Well, no. If a landlord and a tenant make a contract, then both parties are going to be held to abide by the contract. And I mean, that's one thing a landlord and tenant can do if there's a good faith negotiation between them, and a tenant wants some protections for habitability, that can be written into the lease. And if it's written into the lease and the landlord signs off on it, then a tenant can go to court to enforce that. So lease is very important, and most landlord-tenant disputes can be resolved by a well-written lease. So I think that's a good point.
Thank you. And just before you're listening again to KBF 88.3 Speak Up Arkansas, we want to hear from you. Speak to us at 501-433-0088 or at speakupar@gmail.com. Amy?
And one thing that Ellie mentioned earlier is you can visit fairproperty.org, and there is a list of what you can do, what you can do as a tenant to inform and protect yourself, what you can do as a landlord if you care about having healthier, safer homes and communities, and what everyone who's concerned about how the one-third of Arkansans who are renters, their living situations, what we can all do to try to improve this situation. Fairproperty.org.
Hmm. Neil, in the report, you all do a demographic breakdown of the renters and some of the risk factors. And one of the findings you have is that being Hispanic and having less than a high school education are significantly associated with having problems with your landlord. Can you speak to that a bit?
So we have, we found that people who are Hispanic reported more than other groups that they had bad experiences with their landlords. From some of the organizing that we've done in the Hispanic community, we know that there are often leases are written in English and read by translated by someone, usually from the community, to other people. So they can never get an accurate reading of what's in the lease. There's always the implied threat that will call immigration. And so there's just real abuse, and not only in other areas as well, financial transactions. We found that the less educated you were, the more problems you had, because then the landlord felt they could take advantage of you. And also probably meant the poorer you were.
Are there legal remedies for, and I think especially in this environment, I can imagine that for Hispanic residents who may quite possibly be undocumented, that kind of exacerbates that that anxiety connected to being the tenant in a bad situation. And so are there legal remedies for undocumented people who are tenants?
I mean, anyone who's in this country who's a party to a contract can bring something in court to enforce that contract. But the challenge is there is a lot of fear, especially now, in accessing the courts. And with the SB 25 coming into law, that compounds the issue where a landlord can threaten criminal charges against a tenant. So it's not only you're going to have to move, but the police are going to come out here, and the landlord can use that as a way to threaten somebody whose status may be either not permanent or they may be undocumented. And just to follow up, it's fairpropertylaws.org.
Thank you. So just to reiterate, perhaps to keep going around G's bend, as my grandmother says, we're talking about in all of these circumstances, this single state enforcing criminal, the statute rather, enforcing a criminal penalty for what is a civil contract. I was going to ask, how does that work? You might respond that it doesn't. How does that work in this? And I have to admit, I'm rather confused because, of course, there was Judge Wright's ruling in 2015, and it seemed like it, as Jason said, it covered a lot. And so I guess I'm confused about why, in terms of legislation, we're going back this route. I mean, I know the why, but I just don't have the larger picture of what is it going to look like. And again, back to my broader question, where do we go from here? Just daily, where do we go?
Well, the realities of the failure to vacate law is that it does not allow a judge to evict a tenant from their rental unit. Now, with the new law, it's going to allow a judge to impose criminal fines against a tenant, which if the the tenant doesn't pay those, that can lead to jail time or other misdemeanor charges. But the way that it works mainly is just the coercive effect of having a sheriff show up to your door and tell you you have to show up for a criminal arraignment and plead not guilty or guilty. And so a tenant really never gets the chance to explain what's going on, whether they paid the rent or didn't pay the rent. So from here, right now we have three judicial circuits who declared the existing statute unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And then Jason and I and an attorney from the National ACLU have brought a federal challenge to that existing statute. And that's what you were talking about, where we filed a lawsuit claiming that the statute was unconstitutional in federal court. No one fought us on it, so the judge reached out to the Attorney General's office and asked the Attorney General to present an opposing viewpoint, explain which parts of the law might be constitutional.
And that's why she asked for a stay.
Well, she said that the legislature was working on something.
I see.
And so the judge stayed the case until this new law was enacted.
And since the new law is enacted, where does your case stand? Jason?
Well, the judge asked us to inform him when something happened in the legislature, either the legislative session ended or a new law was enacted. So we are planning to inform him very shortly that a new law has been enacted. And then we will commence briefing. Now, it's our point of view that the new law is really irrelevant to our case because our client wasn't charged under the new law. He was charged under the old law.
I see.
We're going to commence briefing on that, but the case is ongoing and we're still hoping to get a favorable ruling. And if we do get a favorable ruling there, then that will have statewide applicability and should end prosecutions of the law.
And so it won't require a new challenge if you all get a favorable ruling.
Not if we get the kind of ruling we want to get. Now, there's no guarantee that the judge
right.
will do that, especially since the Arkansas General Assembly has acted and changed the statute somewhat. He may decide that the case is legally moot at this point and dismiss it. We just don't really know, but we're certainly going to keep trying.
Okay. You're listening to KABF 88.3. This is Speak Up Arkansas with our distinguished panel of guests, and we're talking about the pitiful and, yes, unique state of landlord-tenant laws in the state of Arkansas. We have with us Ellie Wheeler from the Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, Amy Pritchard from the William H. Bowen School of Law Consumer Protections Clinic, Mr. Neil Seeley, the Executive Director of the Arkansas Community Organizations, and Jason Auer, Staff Attorney with Legal Aid of Arkansas and Bad Mama Jamma. We have just a short amount of time, and I want to say thank you all because I feel like I've been in school a bit today, and so it's a lot to digest because it's almost a two trains running situation. And, you know, I think, of course, the report goes a long way. We have a caller, fortunately, because I was filibustering. Speak up, Arkansas. Speak to us.
It's about the tenant stuff.
Yes, sir.
Just a question, because it never gets brought up, that about the landlords and stuff, how they can still legally discriminate against anybody in the LGBT community.
Anybody?
Well, I will say that LGBT is currently not a protected class under the either Federal Fair Housing Act or the Arkansas Fair Housing Act. So in that way, there are not as many protections for LGBT people as there are for some other protected classes. So it allows for a little bit more discrimination based on those grounds. There are ways to tie in LGBT issues with gender discrimination or other types of discrimination. HUD has enacted some protections that apply to federally subsidized housing, but there definitely are less protections there.
And then what about also some of these states are passing religious freedom acts so they can discriminate. If say a person doesn't want to rent to a divorced woman or something like that.
That's a great question.
Well, any kind of state law that a state legislature might pass is going to have to be congruent with federal law. And I think, states are going to have to be very careful with that type of legislation to make sure it doesn't run afoul of federal civil rights law, because if it does, it'll be superseded and people could still get in trouble if they were acting upon that law in a way that was discriminatory towards others.
And for our project to study the health impact, we are very interested in talking to some LGBTQ folks about problems they are having getting good housing. Another group that we have focused on is those going through reentry who can't get good housing. People won't rent to them. There's now some even fair housing implications for people going through reentry and the potential for legal remedies there. So yeah, you're welcome to call me 376-7151. Love to talk to you.
7151?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thank you, Neil. I have just a little bit of time. Sorry. Have just a little bit more time, and so I'd like to get some last nuggets from our guests, and want to say thank you again to Ellie Wheeler, Amy Pritchard, Neil Seeley, and Jason Auer for being with us and helping us dissect and digest this, and helping us kind of look toward the future of a more just situation for tenants in our state. I want to emphasize again, and this is from the report out of balance, and I think I've been saying out of bounds. It's out of balance. Arkansas renters share their experiences navigating the state's unique landlord-tenant laws. Arkansas is the only state in the country that does not have an implied warranty of habitability, meaning landlords legally are not required to maintain their properties at any minimum standard, and that is an unfortunate situation. And so just any last things from our guest.
I'd just like to add that I think that the last caller made a great point about LGBT discrimination, and it just, there's always a natural imbalance in power between a landlord and a tenant, and on top of that can be stacked any number of other discriminations that renters can face, and it's really important
Absolutely.
To keep that in mind. So I'm really glad that that was brought up.
Ms. Carla, thank you. Neil?
Okay. And I echo Ellie's remarks. And I think that we are in maybe better position. This will be a long fight, but we have more people coming together to work on this. And I would say let's keep pushing, be creative. Why not invite Insurance and Commerce Committee members to come spend the night with some renters one night, walk a day in our shoes?
Jason.
And I just want to let people know that just because Arkansas has few landlord-tenant rights doesn't mean it has no landlord-tenant rights or no tenant rights. And if you feel that you're in a bad situation or you feel that you're being discriminated against, contact an attorney. I mean, legal services is there. You can call us 5 days a week, 1-800-9-LAW-AID. If you think you've got an issue, it might be a problem that has a legal solution, even here in Arkansas. So I just want to make people aware of that.
Jason, thank you for making that point. I don't think we came around to that. Thank you so much. Could you say that number one more time?
It's 1-800-9-LAW-AID.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Amy.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point that Jason makes. We're still optimistic about the future, and there are still – we had a great victory yesterday where the tenants won their case – against the city of Little Rock. There's small victories along the way, and I think we can build something good out of this. And again, fairpropertylaws.org, you can find the report that Ryan was talking about and a lot of the other information we've discussed.
Right. I want to thank my panel of guests. I want to thank my good friend right across from me, Mr. Paul Kelly, who's been in here with us and keeping the ship moving. And Neil reminded me of my favorite Curtis Mayfield song. It says, "Keep on pushing." Love that song. And that's a good theme for this case. And so thank you all. This is Speak Up Arkansas, 88.3 KBF.
Yes, this is Paul Kelly. Again, I wanted to talk a little bit about some upcoming events. I think it's important doing all this talk that we realize there are a lot of things going on that you can get involved in. For example, tomorrow, Thursday, February 16th, is Hunger Lobby Day at the Capitol. It's sponsored by the Hunger Relief Alliance, and begins at 9 a.m. If you show up at 9 a.m., you can go to the cafeteria in the basement of the Capitol and get a free breakfast and learn law advocacy and lobbying tips during the breakfast. At 10, you can attend committee meetings, and they'll have a schedule of the day's meetings and help you choose a meeting to attend so you can hear sausage being made in the Arkansas State Capitol. Then from 11:30 to 1, you can invite your legislators to a free beans and cornbread lunch at the Capitol Hill building across from the Capitol, and go in there and eat your fill as well. And all day throughout that day, of course, you can meet with your state senator or representative to discuss hunger issues or other things that are on your mind. It's good to go on days like that because there are people there to help you, show you around, kind of hold your hand if you are having a problem. We need to get on to that. After that, we have Little Rock Save Our Schools Family Day at the Children's Library. It's Saturday, February 18th at 10 a.m. There's lots going on about the schools in the city of Little Rock, and there's a way for you to get involved. Next Tuesday, February 21st, is the Civil Rights and Economic Justice Lobbying Day at the Capitol. This is part of this is sponsored by the Arkansas Public Policy Panel. It's part of the Decarcerate Arkansas movement. These folks will be talking about the criminal justice system and what needs to be done and the importance that that plays for, I know, a lot of our listening audience. You can go to the Arkansas Education Building. It's actually right across from the Capitol in the northeast corner of the Capitol grounds. Show up at 8 o'clock or it goes until 3. Again, there will be people there with buttons on and looking for you if you want to get involved. And their schedule is a whole lot like the one that is for the Hunger Relief Alliance one. They'll do things in the morning and meet and go to meetings, so you can join there. And here's my favorite one. There's going to be a town hall meeting with Tom Cotton,